an interview with James Simon, former chairman of the mathematics department, December 8, 88, in my office.
All right.
Let's go ahead. Back again. Question one.
Okay.
Name department, thing.
Jim Simons, mathematics department, professor and chairman.
What year did you come to Stony Brook?
1968.
And how old were you?
30.
From what institution and position did you come?
I came from the Institute for Defense Analyses, which was in Princeton, which was a government laboratory, and I was a researcher.
Okay. But who was primarily responsible for your coming to Stony Brook?
John Toll.
Who interviewed you for the position here?
John Toll, Bentley Glass, and Sidney Gelber.
Why did you come? What factors were most important in your decision?
Well, I came because, first of all, I was looking for a job. I had left the Institute for Defense Analyses abruptly in April of 1968 over the issue of the Vietnam War. The director of the Institute at that time was Maxwell Taylor, who was quite a hawk, and I had publicly taken an opposite position. And in any event, things reached a point where it was better that I leave, and I left, and was looking for a new challenge. I had offers from several universities to join their faculty as a professor. I was a pretty good researcher. And then the possibility of being chairman at Stony Brook came along, and it was I was young, and it sounded very exciting, and I thought I could do it, and that's why.
I see. Okay. You said it came along. Did John Toll meet you somewhere, or did you get simply a letter, or what?
They had been searching for a long time for a chairman of mathematics. There had been a series of acting chairmen going back a number of years. As a matter of fact, when I was at Harvard in my early 20s, I was in a regular poker game. And one of the players who was worked at Arthur D. Little, a guy named Leslie Peck, announced to us one day at the poker game, well, he's leaving A.D. Little and he's going back to academics. And we all said, oh, is that so, Leslie? Where are you going? And he said, well, I'm going to a place called Stony Brook to be chairman of the mathematics department. And that seemed fine, and we get on with the game. I thought he was an odd choice, but what did I know? I think probably he didn't work out too well as chairman.
Apparently not.
But then I believe what happened was that the department had a series of acting chairmen, and it was very difficult, I think, for them to find really what they were looking for, which was a senior, highly qualified person to run the department, someone who was distinguished and demonstrably able to do that sort of thing. Mathematics was very important to the administration because the physics department was quite strong at that time. The mathematics department was weak, and we had a big push, the university had a big push to develop science, and so they really wanted a star to head the mathematics department. By the time they reached me, I believe they had modified their expectations. I was certainly as a very good researcher, and I don't think there was a problem there, but I was young and certainly inexperienced in doing something like building a department. So the word was out, and one day a friend of mine said to me, would you be interested in being chairman at Stony Brook? And I said, maybe. And he said, well, someone asked, they're looking for people soliciting ideas. And I said, well, I could certainly give them my name, that would be fine. And the next thing I knew, I got a call, I think, from Toll, saying that they'd like to interview me for the job. And I came out, I'm sure I gave a talk to the department. I had just solved quite a famous problem in mathematics, so I had a lot of luster at that point.
What was the name of the problem?
It was called the Bernstein conjecture. In my field, in differential geometry, it was an outstanding problem in an area called minimal surfaces, and it had been around for years. And I was lucky enough to have solved that within the previous 12 months. So that was a big result. In fact, it got into the Encyclopedia Britannica, I think, the next year or whatever. So anyway, I had a lot of credence as a researcher.
I see.
And, but the question was, would I be able to build a department, and also was I stable because of the Vietnam business was, you know, a little bit questionable.
All right. Why did you come? Why did you come to Stony Brook?
It was just the most interesting offer that I had. The offer that was competing was to go to, that I thought was also interesting, was to take a position at the IBM laboratories up in Yorktown Heights and be a professor at Columbia. A tentative arrangement had been worked out where I could be both at both places. And that seemed interesting. But I wanted the challenge of administration, frankly. I thought that would be something new for me to do.
Right.
And so it was just the best offer I had.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
What was your understanding of the purposes behind the creation of Stony Brook? What did you know about the place?
Not much, except that they had developed some excellent faculty in areas relating to mathematics, that they were committed, at least as John Toll expressed it, to developing excellence generally as a university. I felt that the setting and the commitment on the part of the administration would make it an exciting place to be. But I certainly didn't know very much of the past history, all the complications associated with a state university and this one in particular and so on and so forth. So.
All right. What were your impressions of the university when you first came? The campus, the people, the department, the leadership, the spirit, and so on.
Well, it was certainly a kaleidoscope of impressions.
You came what date?
I came in September. I came during the summer of 1968.
68.
20 years ago.
Yeah.
20 years ago.
Yeah.
I think different aspects of the operation impressed me in different ways. For example, my first day on the job in the department, one of our faculty members, our only female faculty member, in fact, Elvira Rappaport, in the department, professor, came in and said, "Well, now that we have a chairman, what are you going to do about the bill from Tootsie Taxi?" I said, "What bill from Tootsie Taxi?" And she said, "Well, there's a $50 bill from Tootsie Taxi that I incurred to go into the city to attend a conference, and I've been trying to get reimbursed for that for 2 years, and everyone tells me there's no money and I'm entitled to it and so on and so forth. What are you going to do about that?" So I said, I made a few quick inquiries and determined that, yes, there was no money to reimburse her, and yes, she certainly felt entitled. Fortunately, it was things that were so late in the department that salaries for the year that was about to begin hadn't yet been set. So I said, "Elvira, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to make an adjustment upward in your salary to cover not only the Tootsie Taxi bill, but the taxes on the Tootsie Taxi bill. So I think we increased her salary $100 for the upcoming year in lieu of my being able to make any draw." Well, she thought that was just wonderful. She said, "Well, you're a genius." So that was my first success and administration. As far as the campus goes, I think the first night my wife and I all were here, we went to a demonstration against tripling in one of the dormitories. I stood around in a great deal of mud in the evening with a lot of apparently angry students and mollifying faculty, and I just stood there amazed and watched and listened and got my feet dirty and went home. I thought John Tull was wonderful. I felt that he was dedicated to doing what to excellence on the side of the faculty, and he and the rest of the administration, Alec Pond and so on, certainly supported me in those first couple of years. So it was a very mixed picture, but a very exciting one.
Good. You have the reputation of having been the one to either turn the department around or put it on its feet and make it, bring it up to standard, so to speak. What was your estimate of the department when you came? What were its needs? And how did you go about changing the situation?
Well, first of all, before I came, the more experienced people advised me not to do it, that building a new mathematics department from scratch or from close to scratch was a very, very difficult job. It really hadn't been done in years, and advised me that it would be very difficult to do. I didn't see why, so I paid no attention to that. When I came, the department was a little bit better than I had been led to believe, or than its reputation, let's put it that way. There were a handful of perfectly competent older mathematicians, two or three or four of which had decent research reputations.
Marcus.
Not Barkus so much. Barkus was a very earnest guy and a competent guy. I think Doss was a strong mathematician. Seuss was not too bad. Well, even Elvira Rappaport was not without redeeming features. Let me see, who else? Alfred Adler was a complicated guy who was in the department, but he was not really ever committed to the department and was really not too strong anyway.
Lister?
Bill Lister was not an active researcher at that point and hadn't been. Neither was Bill Fox, neither was Paul Kumpel. They were all willing and able to do a lot of work in the department and did, and in some cases I guess still do. No, it's 20 years later, but there were three or four people of research competence. Also, there was a very good man named Pincus, who had been an adjunct until the previous year. He'd been at Brookhaven and was just joining the department, or had just joined the department. He was a first-class mathematician of the age of... He was probably in his late 30s at that time. So we started with not a terrible base. Secondly, when the year that I came, Barkus had been chairman and, of course, was part of the process in which I was hired. I say John Tull hired me, but I think Barkus must have been a leader in the department to push for that appointment. A few pretty good people came that year. Erwin Krah came that year. A man named John Thorpe came that year. Tony Phillips came that year. I believe all those three are still in the department. They all received tenure and deserved it.
What about the structure of the department? Was it top-heavy with tenure?
Medium-heavy with tenure, yes, but the good thing was that at that time there was a tremendous demand for mathematics amongst the undergraduates. The reason for that was probably to do with the fact that if you were a teacher of mathematics, you got a deferment from the war. But whatever reason it was, the year that I came, 10% of the undergraduates were majoring in mathematics, never mind the big service load of the calculus that other departments take and so on. So that we were given, and that was part of the deal, I was given a lot of new resources. And I used that. We hired 10 new people in the first year, and 10 new people in the second year. And, of course, we let people go as well, people whose contracts were ending and so on. But we made a significant expansion in the number of lines. And that was enough room to bring in enough really talented people, because we were very successful, to really tip the scale.
Why were you successful?
Well, I felt it was an easy sell. It was a sales job. But we started with, the first appointment that we made was someone whom I'd known, many of these people I had known for a long time, but we brought a guy named Leonard Charlap from Penn, who was a professor, I guess he was an associate professor at that time at Penn. He was fairly good, not star quality, but he was pretty good and was a signal to the community that people of reasonable stature would move to Stony Brook. Now, the guy I was angling for was a fellow named Jim Axe, who was a very big star. He was at Cornell and had recently won the Cole Prize in number theory and was an outstanding mathematician. And we offered Axe a very attractive package, including a lot of summer support and an extra of 1/9 and whatever we could do. And I spent a lot of time recruiting Axe. And he came. He liked the waterfront. He liked the money. He liked the environment. He and I had known each other for a long time. Now, once Axe accepted, then it was clear that this was, you know, we were going to be big time, or at least what passes for big time in the mathematics world. So that we got Ronald Douglas from Michigan. We got a guy named Jeff Cheeger, who was had been a student of mine.
Where?
Jeff had been my student while I was working in Princeton. He was a graduate student at Princeton. While I was working at the Institute, I was his thesis advisor.
I see.
And I had taught him at Harvard when I was teaching at Harvard, and he was an undergraduate. He's turned out to be an extraordinarily good mathematician, as has Douglas. We brought another, we went to Germany and brought two other outstanding geometers, one of whom, Detlef Grimol, is still in the faculty, and his associate, Wolfgang Meyer, who's subsequently gone back to Münster in Germany. And Cheeger and Grimol were collaborators, and Meyer and Grimol were collaborators, and I was also a geometer, so four of us were geometers, and that made us in a year a real center in geometry, comparable, let's say, to Berkeley. Geometry was a subject which at that time didn't have nearly as the appeal that it does today in mathematics. It's since become more central. So at that time it was relatively easy to become an important center because there were only three or four departments where that would be very strong. And then, in fact, we brought out a fifth fellow from UCLA in that area, or a fourth fellow. And anyway, we hired 10 people. We hired another number theorist to accompany Axe. The idea was, well, you come, and then you can bring so-and-so in the usual way, I guess, departments get built. And in the second year, I think our appointments weren't as good as they were in the first year, but we made some very good ones. So that by the end of the second year that I was there, we really had put together a first-rate department. Not the best in the United States, but a first-rate department.
Just for my information, What are the major branches of mathematics that a university department should have?
Well, I would say there are four branches of mathematics. Three of them are more major than the fourth. Well, even that's not true. The major branch of mathematics are what's called analysis, which is things that grow out of calculus. Study of functions, partial differential equations, ordinary differential equations, and all that kind of stuff is analysis. Typically, that is the largest component of mathematics. Algebra is a second branch of mathematics. And that's abstract algebra, group theory, ring theory, field theory, theory of equations. It gets very, obviously, very complex. The third major area of mathematics is geometry, but geometry in the most general sense. That includes topology, it includes differential geometry, anything to do with shape and size and that sort of thing is geometry. Now, when I say that geometry had not been so popular in those days, I meant what's called differential geometry, which is at the core of geometry, but what was really popular in those days was topology, which is a much more abstract area of geometry. Then the fourth branch, I would say, is logic, mathematical logic, and that gets you also into discrete mathematics and things that today are quite important, maybe not central in a mathematics department, but things that relate to computer science, computational complexity, algorithms, and all that sort of thing, which is sort of on the cusp of mathematics, computer science, and applied mathematics. But mathematical logic is really a fourth area of mathematics. We were never strong in logic. In fact, I don't think we ever had more than one person in that field. Algebra, of course, acts as a tower. But we didn't have too much strength in algebra either, because he wasn't someone, as it turned out, who attracted a lot of people. He was kind of a loner. His being there was a terrific inducement in general for people to come, but he wasn't a person who a lot of people wanted to come and work with. At least, as far as we could tell, that wasn't the case. Where we were particularly strong was in geometry, as I said, and in analysis. Between Pincus and Douglas, and some people who came to work with them, we had a very good group in that area, and also in complex analysis, which Erwin Krah is a leading person in. So between real and complex analysis, we had a pretty good group, and in geometry.
For mathematics, was the proximity to Brookhaven or to New York City of any advantage?
Certainly not to Brookhaven. To New York City, not really. I would say it was good that NYU, Curran Institute, and Columbia were there, but I would say it was a marginal advantage.
The characteristics of the island as a place to live, were they an advantage?
Well, I tried to make it an advantage. I think it was an advantage to people who liked the seashore. I would always take people to the beach. I had all my favorite cliffs and overlooks and so on. I had gotten a house in Oldfield, in the Crane Neck area, which...
Or in Crane Neck? Before the canyon.
I had gotten a house in Oldfield, in the Crane Neck area, which...
Or in Crane Neck? Before the Kenyon House.
Before the Kenyon House, I had a house in Crane Neck on a little street called Laurel Lane. It's a little dead-end street, cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the woods, in the winter you could see the sea. And so for some people, it was very attractive. For other people, that didn't mean too much to them. But you would try to sell the positives and downplay the negatives.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Let me see. Were your activities confined to the Stony Brook campus, or did you have relations with the central office, or you obviously have relations within the discipline?
A lot of relations within the discipline. I had no relation with SUNY Central, if that's what you mean.
Yes.
No, I didn't. Anything about them.
What about the life of a faculty member at Stony Brook? Or the characteristics of the faculty at Stony? And I'll get to the students next.
Well, perhaps like most departments, the social life amongst the mathematicians revolved mostly around the mathematicians. And I think it was very good, because most of us in those years, most of the new people, were roughly the same age or younger. I don't think I hired anyone who was particularly older than myself. Axe was maybe a year older, but basically we brought in a lot of young people. Very good people, but young people. So we all had kind of a good time together. In fact, I think we probably had too good a time together. There were some divorces, and there was, maybe a little too much socializing. But those early years were really very exciting. We had big conferences out here. We had many visitors.
Name a conference or two.
Well,
this is one of the things that I haven't got a good picture of, the extent to which the departments were centers or served as centers for the activities of their own discipline.
Well, the first summer that I was here, we had two conferences, one a national conference and one an international conference. One was in a field called Riemann Surfaces, which Erwin Krah organized. Brought people from around the country. It was a relatively small conference, maybe 30 or 40 people, and it was very successful. The second conference, which was one of the things that brought Jim Axe to the university, was the promise and the arrangement that we would have the International Congress on Number Theory on the campus. Was quite a different matter. We had that in the summer of 69, as well. In other words, after I'd been there 1 year, Axe was just in the process of joining the faculty. People came from all over the world, maybe 200. They were housed on the campus. Every problem you could imagine occurred. You can't imagine. Plus the fact that during those 2 or 3 weeks, we had a real hot spell. And, of course, the dormitories aren't air-conditioned, and it was terribly humid and so on. Still in all, there were lectures every day, barbecues at night, and I guess, as those things go, it probably was a perfectly adequate conference. As far as I was concerned, it was a tremendous headache. yeah. But, that was fine. After that, I'm sure we've had many, many, although I don't think any on that scale. But as the years have gone by, the department being established and so on has had many different mini conferences and that sort of activity.
Has the quality kept up since you left?
Oh, yes. I think it has. I think we lost a few, we gained a few. I was only chairman, actually, for the first 2 years I was there. Then in the third year, I became provost of mathematical sciences. We made an effort, and we succeeded for a year, in uniting the three departments, mathematics, applied mathematics, and computer science, into a larger unit. It was my idea that a great deal of the future growth was going to come on the applied side, and in particular in computer science. And this bubble of interest in pure mathematics, as evidenced by the 10% enrollments and so on and so forth, was going to diminish. And that we wouldn't have the halcyon days of the administration throwing money at us in order to build, which was perfectly correct, as it turned out. But
So I thought, well, if we could unite these three departments and get one group, and I will be provost, and we would have a chairman of each department, and we could try to upgrade the quality of those two departments, which was far below our own at that point in time. That failed. Part of the failure was my own fault. I was going through a lot of personal problems at the end of that third year that I was there, in the process of getting a divorce, under a great deal of strain, and resigned at the end of that third year as provost and returned to the mathematics department. Now, the division carried on, the Division of Mathematical Sciences carried on for another few years, but it never had the kind of leadership that might have made that organization succeed. Although, for all I know, it was a poorly designed organization in the first place. Maybe nothing would have made it succeed in that structure. So I went back to being a professor, but then was asked again to be chairman, which I did for only 1 year in 70, in the early 70s, I don't remember, 73, 74 or something like that. And we hired some good people that year as well. That's what I like to do, is hire people.
Yeah.
Then I went off to Europe, spent a year in Geneva, 75, 76, and when I returned, I was became half-time in the mathematics department, and then resigned altogether because I was going into business and was leaving academics, which I did. So that was 12 years ago or so.
Okay. Anything else that you, what about the quality of students?
Well, the quality of students, when I arrived, among the undergraduates, was not bad. At that time, Stony Brook had a pretty bright level of undergraduates. Harvard it wasn't, but it wasn't bad. The graduate students, at least in our department, were unbelievably bad. They were so bad that some of them were not allowed to teach calculus to the freshmen in sections because they didn't know calculus.
Where did you get the graduate students?
Well, of course, we got them. I don't know where they were gotten before, but there were a certain amount of fellowships and so on to give out, and I guess there was pressure to...
Go ahead.
You know, there was pressure to accept a certain number, and they did. But graduate students, you know, the good graduate students like to go to places which have big reputations and so on, and we certainly didn't. So it was a real problem for this high-class faculty that we were bringing in to have to deal with low-class graduate students. And, of course, the problem gradually corrected itself as the reputation of the department spread, but there's quite a long lag. My experience is that it was 5 or 6 years before the reputation of the department caught up with the people who were applying to graduate school. Now, 20 years later, as far as I can tell, the department has excellent graduate students, and in fact, some of my friends complain that they have too many good students and they're running too many theses and don't have enough time for their own work. And I point out, well, isn't this the problem that you always dreamed of having? And they said, yes, well, now we have it, and it's a real problem.
Okay.
I'll never forget the first month I was there, the graduate students invited my wife and me to a party somewhere in Lake Ronkonkoma, given by the graduate students. I think we were the only faculty members there. I was the only faculty member there. And it was a lot of fun. And I liked some of the people. And we had one from Portugal. God knows how she got there, but she was quite good. In fact, she became a student of Axe.
And there may have been one or two others, but it was really terrible. Now, over the years, I think what happened was that while the graduate students have really gotten to a fine level, from what I can gather, the undergraduates at Stony Brook, I think, on the average, are not as good as they were in 1968, at least. The average student is not as good. There are a lot more of them, of course.
What else can I tell you?
I think I probably run out of questions.
Fine,
there, Jim.
Well, let me see.
Any individuals in the university who stood out as...
Can I light a cigarette? Do you have...
By all means,
yes.
Do you have something I could... A wastebasket or something I could use for an ashtray?
You use that as an ashtray?
Oh, yeah, that'll be fine.
Well, of course, there were people in the department who I thought really contributed a great deal from the first instance. Probably the most consistently constructive faculty member was Erwin Krah, who subsequently became chairman and was chairman for a long time, and I think probably still is, or sometimes is and sometimes isn't, but mostly is.
Did you recruit Tucker by any chance?
No, I didn't recruit Tucker. Yeah. Tucker was in applied mathematics, and Alan Tucker came into applied mathematics. The problems in applied mathematics were a leitmotif of all my time at Stony Brook. It was never a department that managed to get out of its own way somehow and really take off. In fact, now they've appointed this year a very, very well-known and strong guy, Mr. Glim, to be its chairman, and that may be the beginning of a new birth for applied mathematics. Other people, oh, I don't know.
Do you have any relations with people in the humanities or the social sciences?
Well, I was very fond of the graduate dean, who at that time was Herb Weisinger, who had been, I believe, the chairman of the English department. And I found him intelligent and supportive. Other people in the humanities, not really. Certainly in those early years, I just didn't know too many people out of mathematics. A few in physics, of course. Frank Yang was stimulating to be around. And a few of the other people in the physics department who were interested in mathematics and vice versa was the genesis of something which today is very important at the university. There's a very strong interaction between mathematics and physics in exactly the area of geometry, which I mentioned at the beginning was a relatively modest area of mathematics, has blossomed to being a central area, and it's central in part because it interacts so strongly with modern physics. So there's a very strong interplay between the kind of physics that Frank Yang does and the kinds of geometry that I did and that others in the department do today. So that interaction was very good. Stanley Ross, now that I recall, was the dean at the time that I came, but he was on his way out. So I guess that Gelber didn't interview me when I came. Ross interviewed me, but Ross was going, I believe, to Texas or something.
That's very right.
And Gelber was taking his place, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
So that my boss, I suppose, was Sid Gelber. But really, most of the... I brought my problems to Toll.
Yeah.
And I didn't have too many problems, I must say, or at least I didn't have many that I brought to Toll, but mostly about how can we get more money to pay so-and-so, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Toll was, and Pond were very helpful.
Other people?
Not really.
But maybe I'm just not, the Bentley glass, of course, but maybe I'm not remembering. It's a long time ago.
Right, 20 years.
Okay. Yep.
No, I think you've, I think you've filled in a part of the picture that's been missing.
Good.
I appreciate you taking the time. I know you're busy.
Good.
I enjoyed the, I'll turn this off now, I guess. Unless you have something else.
No, I don't have-